part of the talk was given some time ago, so some of you might have heard about this topic, part of it. There will be something new. So let's start with the motivation. Motivation of this topic is coming from the orbital, what is called orbital elliptic genera. In fact, a generating function of what is called orbital elliptic genera. For a symmetric product. This formula, which I will write down in a moment, was originally written down by physicists, and motivation of this talk is kind of trying to understand the geometry behind that formula. So what is this? So let me start discussing orbital elliptic genera. The context is that suppose you have a closed complex manifold with a first chunk loss is zero, and suppose you have a finite group action. And in this case, one can associate something called orbital elliptic genera, or elliptic genus. This is the following object, or let's see, which I will denote by this notation. This is a power series with coefficients in Lorentz series in the variable y, and I mean power series in Q. Intrinsically, this must be given by our chi y characteristic of G twisted free loop space. Take the centralizer fixed point part, and then take its dimension, graded dimension. Let me just write down what these symbols mean. For group element G, Lg of M is a G-twisted loops. These are our loops which are twisted by the element G. So this is picture is our every time variable moves by one, points shift by G inverse. And since we are dealing with finite group, every element of G has finite order, so eventually this will come back. So this is actually a loop. And so S1 acts on it because this is actually a loop. And also our centralizer of this element G also acts on it. So this is a centralizer. And our chi y of Lg of M, this is heuristic. Let me quote by this formula. One can make sense out of it, but this is S1 equivariant or chi y characteristic of this twisted free loop space. As since centralizer CG acts on this space, this object becomes a module of centralizer. And one takes the CG fixed point subset and then takes the graded dimension. This is basically what it should be, and one can make sense out of this using localization sort of, if you prefer. Okay. So this is the picture when G has finite order. That's the case in when G, our group G is finite. But if G is not finite group, some element can have infinite order. And in that case, elements of this twisted loop is when if order of G is infinite, then element of this twisted loop is a spiral. Something like that. So in our case, when group G is assumed to be finite, we don't encounter this situation, but in general context, we do have spiral inside. And our action gives a motion on this spiral. Okay, so this is kind of a side remark. And to write down the formula which motivated this topic, let me just define symmetric product. So one takes the n-fold Cartesian copy and divided by the symmetric group action. A symmetric product. And then this is an orbifold and not a manifold in general. And what our physicists write down in this was our 97 or something like that, or 8, 7 or 8. They form the generating function of orbifold elliptic genus of the symmetric product of the same manifold M, and then form the generating function. And then they computed this object, and they showed that this is equal, can be expressed in terms of the infinite product. This is M is positive. This is 1, 0, and K, 1 minus P to the N, Q to the N, Y to the K, minus C of M, N, K, where original this orbifold elliptic genera, which is our power series in Q with Laurent coefficient in Y, if this is given by Q to the M, Y to the K, where M is positive or equal to 0, and K is, can take any integers. So this is the formula that physicists wrote down some years ago, and our remarkable observation was that the right-hand side, if you form a generating function, this was shown to be a Ziegler genus to Ziegler modular form. So this is a very well-behaved quantity if we introduce this finite generating function. So this is a genus to Ziegler modular form. So as itself, orbifold elliptic genus of symmetric product is some object, but if I form the generating function, all of a sudden it produces something very interesting. And this infinite sum can be rewritten in terms of infinite product. So the motivation of this project is to understand the geometry behind this infinite product expansion, equating infinite sum into infinite product. What is the geometry behind this mechanism? So, question is, geometry behind this. So that's the topic of this talk. Okay. Now, as it turns out, that kind of formula, infinite sum is equal to infinite product, occurs relatively frequently in nice situations. And in this particular context, on geometric side, much more general formula of this type is valid, not just a formula which applies reproduces this formula, but this formula, this kind of formula, is valid geometrically in much more general context. Okay, so to describe the formula, let me introduce some notations. So M is, in that context, M can be any space, topological space, and depending on the category we are in, holomorphic category, continuous or smooth, we can use suitable framework. And G, we don't assume G to be finite, we simply assume G is discrete. And we introduce auxiliary manifold, sigma, which is assumed to be connected, and let its fundamental group to be gamma. The formula I wrote down over there corresponds to the case when sigma is circle, simplest one-dimensional manifold. So sigma can be a circle. In that case, the general formula I will write down in a moment will reproduce that that formula. But sigma can be any manifold. For example, surfaces with or without boundary. And so so with these objects we consider the mapping space. M quotient G. This is a primary object we want to investigate. Space of all mappings in a suitable category from sigma to this quotient. But this is not well-behaved space, as it turns out. So instead of this space, consider orbifold mapping space. Which is defined to be R. So this is a definition. Basically, we consider the left of these maps. So we consider universal cover of sigma. And some maps from sigma to this quotient lift to our equivariant map from universal cover to manifold M. But not all maps lift. But those which lift have nice properties. So, and lifted map have some equivariant properties. So take all the, let's see. Take theta to be homomorphism from the fundamental group of gamma. That's a Deck transformation. Gamma to G. G is acting on this manifold M. So theta, let's see. We consider theta equivariant map. And take the sigma to the M. Take the theta equivariant map. But we really want to approximate this mapping space. So we divide by G. But that has the same effect of taking the conjugacy class and dividing the individual space by its centralizer. So this is a centralizer of image of theta inside of G. Okay, theta is a homomorph, so dividing by G. Now this replacement will behave very well. Let's see. So, for example, when sigma, this auxiliary manifold, the source manifold of this mapping space is a circle, then this mapping space, we simply write orbifold loops. This is given by our direct union over conjugacy classes of G of, what is this? Oh, LG of M divided by the centralized of G. And this is what is appearing in the definition of orbifold elliptic genus. And when sigma is a surface with a boundary, this also produces some interesting case, which I will describe later. So actual example is just this one for now. Now, as before, for a manifold with G action, we can form its n-fold Cartesian product. Since each M admits G action, this Cartesian product admits our action of a Rees product. And quotient space is nothing but the symmetric product of the individual quotient. Gn. Now, to describe the formula, one more notation. For any space X and T are indeterminate, we form the formal sum, a formal union of symmetric powers of X. So this is 0 T to the K, SDN of SDK of X. So this is nothing but this all the symmetric union of symmetric powers of X. In some context, this union of space really should be thought of as 1 minus T of minus X. So this union symmetric sum should be thought of as the 1 minus T to the power of the space. This object is really should be regarded as in this way. This can actually make sense in some suitable categories like Grothendieck ring of varieties. One can actually make sense of this. And for example, in topological side, for example, if you take the topological Euler characteristic, this is a topological Euler characteristic, then some of topological Euler characteristic of symmetric product is by McDonald's identity, it's really given by this formula, simply taking Euler characteristic of this manifold X, of this space X. So this thinking of this union of symmetric product is in this way is really the right way to think about this object. Now, so our so let me write down the decomposition formula, which is valid in this general context. So as before, we collect our things of the symmetric product for all symmetric powers for the orbifold mapping space. So let's see. So collect all the orbital mapping space whose target is the symmetric powers of this quotient. Just collect all of them. Just infinite union. And that can be rewritten as an infinite product. Question is, what is the factor of individual product? So this factor will be related to individual factor over there after taking numerical invariance. Now this factor will be so this infinite product goes over all the covering spaces of this source manifold sigma. Take all the isomorphism classes of connected covering space of this source manifold sigma. So this is iso class, class of all connected cover. And individual factor will be number of sheets of this covering will be denoted by this absolute value of this quotient. That's a number of sheets. And we are using that union of all the symmetric powers. And what comes inside is orbital mapping space of whose source manifold is this covering space of the original manifold. And target space has no longer this symmetric power, only quotient, only this orbit space, orbifold. Now, since we are taking product over all covering spaces, here we are dealing with really our sigma, so somehow we have to divide by something. The obvious group is the group of deck transformations. When we have a connected cover, we have a group of deck transformations. These are a group of deck transformations. Since a group of deck transformations acts on this source manifold sigma prime, one can easily verify that it acts on this orbital mapping space. So we can physically divide it. Notice that since we are taking all possible connected covers, this covering space may not be Galois. We consider all possible covering spaces, not necessarily Galois. And so take this all the symmetric powers of this space. And that's equal to that space. And we can
why is B an extra T?
Yes, yes. T is now this powers of P. And this powers of P depends on the number of sheets of this covering space. P is an indeterminate, yes. P is indeterminate. Let's see. This is what comes out after analyzing this space. And let's check what one gets when this auxiliary manifold sigma is a circle. Let's see. So when this auxiliary manifold is circle, that formula reduces to the following one. So in this formula, we take all the covering spaces of circle, finite sheeted covering spaces, so it's again a circle of bigger length. So sigma prime over the circle is again a circle of bigger length. And Galois group will be simply ZRZ, well, ZR. And so that formula says, if we take the union of these spaces, L of SPN, orbifold loops of this symmetric product can be written as a direct product of all finite covers that's indexed by integer r. Every finite cover is parameterized by positive integers. And S of P to the R, R is the number of sheets. And L of orbifold of orbifold loops of the M over G, but since we are looking at orbifold mapping space for the covering space, so it's a mapping from a bigger loop. So this is the orbifold mapping space, orbifold loops of length R. And then, since Galois group is ZR, divide this space by ZR action. So that's what we get for the loop space case. And that's the formula corresponding to that algebraic version. If an by localization theorem, if one computes the numerical invariant Kaiwa characteristic, that's the formula we get. So this is the orbifold mapping space of the circle of length R, so RZ to MG. So this is a bigger circle, length R circle, to mapping to original circle. Okay. So that kind of decomposition formula, infinite sum equals infinite product, is actually valid in a much more general geometry context. now, in their paper, these four physicists, Digoras, Mova, Derivin, de Berlinde, they also wrote down another formula in connection with this generating function. They rewrote that formula in terms of text operators acting on Jacobi forms. And next topic is to find a geometric counterpart of Hecke operator, which corresponds to ordinary Hecke operator acting on Jacobi forms. So next topic, Hecke operators. Now, here we are dealing with Hecke operators acting on Jacobi forms in two variables y and q. Q of m, y to the k. So m is 0, k. So this is the r, weight 0 Jacobi forms, so-called Jacobi forms. This is the expansion of the Jacobi form. And this Heck operator, what Heck operator does, well, are in terms of the power series, it's a bit complicated formula, but let's see, M K C C of M D K. Q of AM, Y of AK. So this is the effect of Rth Heck operator on this Jacobi form. And their observation concerning that formula in terms of Heck operator is that they rewrote the infinite product right-hand side in terms of Heck operators. So left-hand side is the same. That infinite product, they rewrote in terms of Heck operator in the following way. So we apply Heck operator for the original, very original elliptic genus of, well before the elliptic genus of M, and then apply Heck operator for various R and take the formal summation with indeterminate P and then take the exponential, then this expression is the same as that infinite product. So in terms of Heck operator, expression kind of simplifies dramatically in some way. And here we have our geometric version of this infinite product formula. So our question is there something we may call geometric Heck operators in this geometric context, which would behave nicely in this way? Okay, so this is a kind of Heck operators. The Heck operators we seek for are, first of all, we expect that they would satisfy certain nice identities, like usual Heck operators or modular forms satisfy. But a Heck operator, we seek for a Heck operator which is acting on geometric context, namely acts on space and produces another kind of space. That's a Heck operator we seek for. Now, if we look at this formula and stare at it for a while, there is actually a very obvious choice what the Heck operator should be if we want to have a formula of this sort. Let me use a bold T for the Heck operator acting on geometric context, kind of. Sort of certain spaces. Spaces. by staring at it, there's an obvious choice, and that obvious choice is the following one. we want TR should behave on the orbifold mapping space. Let's see. Sigma of energy to be our collection of similar spaces over covering spaces of order R. So, so this will be our union of all our orbifold mapping spaces for each isomorphism classes of connected cover of order R, and so we simply correct all of them, simply replace this source manifold sigma by its covering spaces, connected covering spaces of order R, just simply correct all of them. Then by just a formal simple computation, right-hand side will produce something similar to this one. So this is the obvious guess what the Hecke operator in geometric context should be. Question is, does this behave nicely in this geometric context? The answer is probably not necessarily, but for the case of torus, when sigma is two-dimensional torus, this Hecke operator does satisfy the ordinary Hecke identities. So our proposition. So consider the case when source manifold sigma is a two-dimensional torus. So we are looking at the orbifold mapping space from torus to orbifold. So two-dimensional torus. And then, for any these quotient space, any space M and group action G, for any M G, this TR does satisfy ordinary Hecke identities, which are the well-known one. If we compose, they multiply when M and N are relatively prime, and when if we have a prime power, our composed prime powers, then this produces Hecke operator corresponds to the product of the prime powers, and then our T of R minus 1, where T is a prime. So this is the ordinary Hecke identities on acting homogeneous forms. This is our, I haven't discussed, this is some kind of operator. This is a certain operator. Related to our covering. Let's see. If one expresses torus as R2 of the divided by the lattice L, then this operator LP is related to the covering space corresponding to let me write this as universal cover of T, corresponding to our P times of this lattice L. So this is each element is multiplied by P. So this is actually P square sheeted covering space. It's a sum operator related to this covering space. So there's some technical thing, but formula basically is the same as the ordinary Heck identity. And that's the case for torus. Since we have the explicit formula for the good guess of the Heck operator in geometric context, we can ask what kind of identities these operators will satisfy, for example, when sigma is the higher dimensional tori or any two-dimensional surfaces closed with boundary. So there may be some interesting identities, but I do not know. But for torus case, that this ordinary identity is valid. Okay. So our I guess for the remaining time, I think I will discuss how our this infinite product comes about. How what is our what is involved in the proving that infinite product expansion? Proof of decomposition formula. Some part of it is straightforward. For example, if group G is trivial, so if there is only symmetric powers involved, the proof is not difficult. So the question is how to deal with G in the general case. So let's see. So we want to analyze this left-hand side. What this space look like? Sigma so by definition the way we defined this orbital mapping space was union over all conjugacy classes of homomorphisms from the fundamental group of sigma into our wreath product. So this one is Mn divided by the wreath product, Gn, and then take the conjugacy class, and then take the sigma equivariant spaces, and then divide by centralizer of this homomorphism, image of this homomorphism, theta in wreath product. So it looks complicated, but actually this turns out to be a very well-behaved object. So our task is to expressing right-hand side in terms of product, and certain part of it is actually very automatic, as in many formulas expressing infinite sum as infinite product, certain part of it is very automatic. So easy part. Decomposing this equivalent mapping space, if you sit down and stare at it, it's relatively easy to write it as product. That's an easy part. What is not so obvious is to analyze the structure of the centralizer. So what is this? This is our theta is our mapping from gamma into Gn. And this is the centralizer of the image of this homomorphism inside of Gn. So consider the image and look at all the elements commuting with the image. So determining the structure of that centralizer of the image is the sort of what is involved in the proof of this formula. Structure of C of G and of, well, image of theta. What is the structure of it? We expect that it has some decomposition into a direct product. But in that case, what would be the individual factor? How does it look like? Again, if there's group G is trivial, this is an easy, well-known question. It you can look at it in any book. The problem I encountered is to analyze this for general G. Okay. Now, let's see. So this is a very group, may look like a very group theoretic question, but we can successfully analyze the structure in using the geometric picture. So let boldface N to be the this N element set. Now, first thing we want to understand is this width product. Then width product appears as the G automorphism group of this G bundle, trivial G bundle over this N element space. That's kind of a useful characterization of width product. And if we have this homomorphism, gamma into GN, that makes this trivial G bundle into a gamma equivariant G principal bundle. Makes into a gamma equivariant G bundle. In this context, we can think of centralizer of the image of theta. This is a purely group theoretic question, but in terms of geometry, it can be thought of as the gamma G automorphism group of this trivial bundle, in which gamma structure is endowed with respect to this theta. So one can think of the centralizer as an automorphism group of a particular G bundle over finite element space. And then we can geometrically study this space, kind of decompose it into irreducible pieces, and then how they combine, then decompose into irreducible gamma G bundles. Now, our sort of irreducible kind of a building block of gamma equivalent G bundles over finite G space. And these objects is of the following form. So sort of irreducible pieces look like this, where H is a subgroup of gamma, finite index, and rho is a homomorphism from H to G And so this is a G principal bundle on which gamma acts. And irreducible gamma G bundles always look like this. And then what we do is to classify all the irreducible bundles, decompose this gamma G bundle, and then look at the automorphism group. Then we can decompose that our G principal bundle, gamma equivalent G principal bundle, corresponding to theta, into irreducible pieces. And irreducible pieces are classified by, first of all, conjugacy classes of finite index subgroup. So this H is finite index. And then some class rho, where rho is Hg now our classification of these irreducible pieces involves conjugacy class of finite index subgroup and element in this quotient group in which normalize acts on H by conjugation, G acts on G by conjugation. So this bracket rho is a class element in this quotient. And then, so these two are conjugacy classes classify all irreducible pieces. And then suppose we have this many irreducible pieces of this one. Isomorphism class. So this completely decomposes that our gamma G bundle corresponding to homomorphism theta. And then we write down what the automorphism should be. So that's a finite statement. So one looks at automorphism of this, that gamma G bundle whose irreducible decomposition is given by this one, then it's immediate to write down what it is. And our aut gamma G of P of H rho. So automorphism of this irreducible piece with product with our, since there are this many identical copies, if you look at the automorphism group of this entire union, you are allowed to permute all theta copies of these ones. So you have a with product in this context. So at least we can decompose centralizing this way. Now the question is, what is this automorphism group of this irreducible gamma G bundle? It has the following description. Now, normalize of H times G acts on this homomorphism set. And rho, for each rho is in this set. For each rho and H, rho is here. And this Cartesian product acts on this home set. And look at the isotropy subgroup at rho. That's T-rho. And T rho contains a normal subgroup given by our this form. One can directly check that this is a subgroup of 0. Let's see. Then let me write down table explicitly. So this consists of UG H cross G such that G rho U inverse H U G is rho H rho H. So that's the T-rho subgroup. And then this automorphism group of this irreducible one is given by this quotient. So this completely determines the structure of this group. And once we know the structure of this centralizer, first of all, we have this decomposition into product. And that product decomposition is compatible with this product decomposition of this space. And you can formally manipulate the formula to arrive at the decomposition formula of the mapping space. Okay. So that's another talk.